It's May 31st, 2016, and welcome to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop podcast. I am Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and each week we check in with our Capitol correspondent, Sean Kitchen, on the good, the bad, and the ugly that is Harrisburg, PA. Raging Chicken Radio is a project of Raging Chicken Press. Check out all our citizen journalism at RagingChickenPress.org. You can subscribe to Raging Chicken Radio on Podbean, on Stitcher, Google Play Music, and iTunes. Podbean's our main site, though, folks. You might want to check that place out. Great app, too, as well, I have to say. Subscribing to Raging Chicken Radio is one of the easiest things that you can do to help support this podcast and all the work that we do with Raging Chicken. If you want to help build a progressive activist media network in PA and beyond, you can become a member for as little as $2 a month. $2 a month, folks. I mean, that's less than the cost of beer or a cup of coffee once a month. Just go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on Become a Member under the Support and Membership tab. Or if you are listening on Podbean, just click the Become a Patron and you'll be on your way. Be sure to check out all the thank you gifts for each membership level while you're there. Seriously, kind of cool stuff. Some Raging Chicken stickers, a t-shirt, opportunity to come onto the podcast, all sorts of cool things. So in addition to today's episode of Out to Coop, we'll be releasing our third edition of our interview series, The Sit Down. Last week, we spoke to Amy Lynch Biniak on issues of labor and higher education. This week, I talk with Paul Ricci, whose blog, CSI Without Dead Bodies, tackles political issues from the perspective of data analysis. Paul was also an organizer for the Bernie Sanders campaign over in Johnstown, PA. That's in the western part of the state, and that's in Cambria County, PA, an area that John Fetterman in his Senate campaign, John Fetterman would call one of the forgotten regions of PA, especially for traditional progressive organizing. And yet, Bernie won Cambria County. Check out that. So, we are 1 week out from the last big primary day for this year's presidential election, folks. The next contest will be next Tuesday, June 7th, when California, with its huge delegate cache, goes to the polls. And Montana and New Jersey and New Mexico and North Dakota and South Dakota, they all hold their primaries and caucuses. It's going to be a big day. California, as I said, is the big kahuna with its 548 delegates at stake. Before we get there, on June 4th, the Virgin Islands will vote, and June 5th, Puerto Rico goes to the polls. So D.C. will close out the season on June 14th. So we're getting to the end of the first part of the horse race, guys. So we'll should be knowing who the nominees are officially in short order time. And then we're going to look forward to the conventions. And you may have heard that the Philadelphia is hosting the Democratic National Convention. And there are plans for some big protests on that. And I want to plug one of those right about now. There's Americans Against Fracking and Pennsylvania Against Fracking is holding a March for Clean Energy Revolution on July 24th in Philadelphia. That's the day before the Democratic National Convention begins in Philly. It's a Sunday, and organizers are hoping for a huge turnout to help push the agenda for our kind of clean energy future. If you want more information about that, you can go to www.cleanenergymarch.org. And if you want to find someone to carpool with or want to bus to the event, you can go to www.cleanenergy.org/bus. You just type in your zip code and it'll kind of give you your options right there. And next week on the sit down, we're going to have Karen Faraday of Burke's Gas Truth to come on and talk a little about the Clean Power Plan and the Clean Energy March. So come back and check us out. And we're going to need a little extra for next week because Sean Kitchen is going to be going on vacation, folks, which we'll talk about at the end of the show today. But today on Out to Coop, we'll be getting into the weeds a little bit. Sean is working on an article about newly proposed legislation that would allow employers to pay their workers in prepaid debit cards. And on the surface, you might say, hey, that doesn't sound so bad. But as they say, the devil's in the details. So down the rabbit hole we go. For now, it is my pleasure to welcome back to the program 1 week ahead of his big vacation out to Colorado. It's Sean Kitchen. Hey, Sean, what's up, man?
Not much. How's it going?
Pretty good. You all excited to kind of head out west next week?
Oh, I can't wait. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to be able to see the Rockies, biking around from brewery to brewery, enjoying other things, going to Yellowstone. Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll come back and we'll kind of get a little special preview on that right at the end of the show today. But Sean, so you've been working on this article and we've been talking about this quite a bit back and forth and, legislation to say employers hey, pay your workers with these prepaid debit cards. I mean, that sounds convenient, right? I mean, what's the background of this bill? I mean, what is this bill all about?
Well, so this starts in June of 2015. It actually goes back to June of 2013 when a McDonald's worker, Natalie Gunshannon, files a class action lawsuit with a bunch of her other employees because they were forced to use these prepaid debit cards as a way of their collecting their wages. They were given these cards and they were loaded up with fees. Some said they were not told about the fees associated with these debit cards. And that was one of the reasons for this lawsuit. The other reason that was that this was not a legal form of payment under Pennsylvania's Wage Payment and Collection Act. So in June of 2015, the judge from Luzerne County rules in favor of the McDonald's employees that this was not a legal form of payment under this act, this law, this labor law in Pennsylvania. And 2 months later, in August 2015, State Senator Don White from Western Pennsylvania starts circulating a co-sponsorship memo trying to make these debit cards legal under the Wage Payment and Collection Act.
So it's a little bit. As I was reading some of the legal background of this and some of the reporting on it, I mean, that a lot of labor lawyers, at least labor lawyers blogs, so it's one of the things they really focus on is that aspect of the bill, like this idea that that court, right, the Pennsylvania court said, no, this is not a legal form of payment under the law. And so this bill, is, as you're just starting to talk about, was an attempt to make that part of it legal. Is that correct?
Yes. This bill would amend the Wage Payment Collection Act to make these prepaid debit cards a legal form of tender. So basically, you get your paycheck every 2 weeks on these debit cards, goes right to that account, and then you could spend it as you'd like.
Okay. So this bill gets introduced by Senator White. Is that correct?
Yes. So the co-sponsorship memo was introduced or started circulating in August 2015. The bill was introduced, I believe, May 13th, and this past May, like two weeks ago. All right. It was sent right to the Senate Banking Committee, Banking and Insurance Committee. And then the very next committee hearing was 1 week later. It was voted out of the committee by a 13-0 vote. And now it's slated for an actual vote on the Senate floor if it still goes through the parliamentary process, the waiting period, on June 6th or 7th when the Senate returns for their June budget fight.
Okay, so 13-0, right? Now, what's the breakdown of that committee? I mean, in terms of Republican Democrats, you know offhand?
I do not know offhand. I believe it's something 8-5 around in that area.
8-5. So you're talking, I mean, it's not like it's all Republicans, right? I mean, you have representative Democrats on there too as well. So this gets voted out of that committee 13-0, right? So a couple things occur to me when I hear something like that. I mean, either like everybody's in support of it, right? Or it seems like one of these things that is kind of non-controversial, like on its face, like, okay, we can do this. Like, I know there was all sorts of ballyhoo going around because the Democrats and Republicans in Harrisburg got together and actually, renamed some bridges and stuff like that. And that was supposed to be some sort of sign that, yes, we can work together. So on the surface, something comes out 13-0. I could imagine people thinking about it as, you know, this is non-controversial. So the idea is that you've got this bill that is going to make this form of payment legal so that, McDonald's or Walmart or whoever, for that matter, instead of giving you a check, instead of giving you a direct deposit, instead of giving you cash, they have to give you a debit card, right? They give you a prepaid debit card and you just go around and use that.
The employees opt into that debit card. They don't give it to you. You can choose to take it.
Okay, so they opt into it, right? So they opt into it. So I look at that and I say, Sean, I could see why that could be convenient. Like, you know, what's the problem with getting a debit card instead of a paycheck?
Well, there's no problem at all with that. I mean, but
oh, good, we're done.
Yeah, no, that's right. So just stop listening right now. Turn it off. But no, turn off the podcast. But there are problems associated with these cards.
Okay.
Supporters of this bill and supporters around like in other institutions and like actually like big name think tanks think that this is a really good way of getting away from the check cashing business and then the money order business. So you because mm-hmm. your fees associate with those checks, right? Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, I believe I was reading somewhere it cost an employer around $2 to cut each check for every employee.
Okay.
this card costs them 50 cents, and that's it.
Okay, so this is a way of reducing cost. Employers,
this is a way of getting out of the this is a way of getting out of the, you know, out of that business within your business. It's a way of getting out of human relations, pretty much the HR role.
Okay,
And then these cards are then given to these employees, and oftentimes they're not really aware of the fees that are associated with these cards, like every other debit card. Somewhat like every other debit card. You can get hit up with fees for paying bills. You get help for fees with looking into your ATM for a balance. You can get paid definitely for overdraft, card replacement. If you lose or your card doesn't work anymore, you have to pay at least $10 or $15 to get it replaced. And then there's all these other tons of fees associated with this.
Well, now this is what I find. This is what I find really interesting, right? Because, like, on the one hand, you've got this debit card, right? That is just a different form of payment, right? That some people might want to argue, well, look, this is, our laws are behind the time. This is kind of the way direction that money and payment is going. So what's the big deal? But what you're pointing to now is say, well, wait a minute, let's talk about the practical implications of this stuff. And I was looking at this, this piece was from Think Progress by this guy, Alan Pike, was talking about the McDonald's case that you were referencing, and talks about Gunshan. It says, Gunshan and other workers faced a $1.50 charge every time they use an ATM to access their wages, and a $5 charge for withdrawing the money over the counter at a cash register. Where a worker who misplaced a standardized paycheck would be able to get a replacement check, the JP Morgan Chase prepaid cards charge $15 replacement fee if lost or stolen. Paying bills online with the card meant spending an additional 75 cents on bank fees, and merely checking the balance of the card triggered a $1 fee. Right? So that seems to be the rub, right? I mean, this seems to be the downside of this. Because on the one hand, this bill is being offered as a solution for low-wage workers who don't have enough money maybe to get a bank account, right? Maybe
they don't have the time,
all this other kind of stuff. So this is a nice, convenient way of doing this. But this fee thing is problematic.
Exactly. And then also employees may be given cards from a company with no ATMs in the area. So every time they actually go to use an ATM machine, there's an extra $3 surcharge, mm-hmm. plus the charge of the machine that you're using. You know, most people don't talk about you get help from your bank for using a wrong ATM, and then you get help with the service charge for using that ATM from the company that runs the machines. So you're looking at more ATM fees right there. People are looking at, you can lose a couple hundred dollars a year in this stuff, and that's a lot of money for someone making $7.25 an hour. In some cases, these fees actually bring down your wages below the actual minimum wage, the federal minimum wage. So this is what these cards are doing. This is something that is the reason why these cards are exploding is because of the regulations that came out of the recession on credit card and debit card fees. The only type of cards that were not regulated coming out of the recession were these prepaid debit cards that companies are using for payroll debit cards.
And there you go. And we're talking potentially like a huge amount of money.
Yes.
As you just said, right? I mean, you're talking about maybe for a worker, this might end up being like $50, $100, $200 over the course of a year. Now, that doesn't sound like much off like initially, just in the abstract. But when you talk about kind of if you're at the lower end of the wage scale, right, that's a significant amount of money, number one. Number two, that if you subtract that $200, right, per year, that you're actually talking about bringing workers below the federal minimum wage, right? That's huge, right, which seems to me kind of, you know, to be a violation of federal law, if you ask me. But then third is that when you start multiplying that by numbers of workers, right? Just imagine if, say, all McDonald's was to go to this system, right? Or all Walmarts was to go to this system. Then you start taking that $50 or $100 per year and multiplying that by thousands and tens of thousands.
Right. And this is something,
and you're talking about a huge windfall for the big banks.
And this is something that these banks and financial institutions and credit card companies have been planning since 2010, since the middle of the recession or the middle of the recovery period. Center for Media and Democracy out of Wisconsin, their PR watch, has an article stating that in 2010, at an American Legislative Exchange Committee summer meeting, ALEC The Visa's vice president for state relations introduced this bill, the Electronic Pay Free Choice Act, which was the first model legislation for expanding the use of payroll debit cards.
This is incredible. And so one of the things that I want to cut, we're coming up to a break right now, and I want to come back. I want to start with that because this is one of the things about what Sean is uncovering here and what Sean is kind of digging into. This is the real story. I mean, on one hand, we've got this windfall, potential windfall for the big banks, right? That's one thing. But number two, this is something that didn't just happen haphazardly. It wasn't just this random senator from Pennsylvania who decided to do this to make it more convenient. This has to do with a much bigger agenda. And I want to get into that in that next segment. So when we come back, we're going to go back to that ALEC legislation. I'm going to ask Sean to kind of unpack that a little bit for us to find out, like, what's this origin of this bill? All right. This is Kevin Mahoney. I'm the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And this is Out to Coop Podcast. We'll be right back after this message.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1987. That was the day that Rose Will Monroe, one of the women who came to be known as Rosie the Riveter, died in Clarksville, Indiana. She was 77 years old. Rose had gone to work in a factory making B-52 bombers in Ypsilanti, Michigan during World War II. She was one of thousands of women in the United States who entered the industrial workforce to support the war effort, while more and more men entered the armed forces. While Rose Will Monroe worked at the factory, the image of Rosie the Riveter was already becoming perhaps one of the most iconic symbols of U.S. labor. The nickname Rosie the Riveter was first used in a song in 1942. The song was inspired by another real-life Rosie. Rosalind P. Walter worked during the war building Corsair fighter planes. Along with the song, a popular poster showed Rosie with a red kerchief tied around her hair, sleeves rolled up, arm muscles flexed, showing the strength of women workers. "We Can Do It" was emblazoned across the top of the poster. Then, an actor by the name of Walter Pigeon visited the Ypsilanti factory. He was helping to make a promotional film to support the war effort at home. When he found out there was a real Rosie who worked as a riveter in the plant, he recruited her for the film. The image of Rosie the Riveter lives on as a symbol of labor and women's empowerment.
All the day long, whether rain or shine, she's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie the Riveter keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little frail can do more than a male can do. Rosie the Riveter. Rosie
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out to Coop Podcast. I'm sitting here with Sean Kitchen, and we're talking about one of the latest, what it's looking to be now, one of the latest attacks on workers in the state of Pennsylvania. Sean and I have been talking about this new legislation that's being proposed that would basically allow employers to pay their employees with the latest form of company scrip known as prepaid debit cards. And I want to kind of alert some folks. I'm going to put some links in our show notes for this too, as well. Last week on May 25th on the Rick Smith Show, you know, Rick's one of our kind of go-to folks. And we have our Raging Chickens over there Monday. But he had Erwin Aronson on the program talking a little about this legislation too as well. So I'm going to put a link there for people who are interested in Sean's article, because when Sean publishes this article, I mean, I think it's going to go big, and people are going to need to pay attention to that. They're going to ask some more questions. So, Sean, right before we went to break, you were talking about this report that came out from the Center for Media and Democracy about the history of this bill. So let's go back to that, because I want you to be able to take some time here to kind of to show people how this plan has been unfolding, right, and who's behind it.
Right. It's not like this thing just popped up out of nowhere. This was something that was game planned with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, since at least 2010. It's one of the earliest documented meetings in an August summer meeting. A vice president from Visa, one of the card companies, introduced this model bill, the Electronic Pay Free Choice Act. where employees were actually forced into these programs and had these cards forced upon them in some states. That bill passed unanimously through that committee. And then, so moving forward, in 2011, the Roosevelt Institute published a report stating that banks were set to lose $14 billion in profits in 2011 because of regulations protecting consumers from fees on traditional debit and credit cards. The stuff you have for your own personal bank account and then your own credit accounts. But what it did not protect or did not regulate were these payroll debit cards.
So as part of that kind of regulation, right? I mean, you know, I think those regulations went in place because people recognized that these banks were gouging consumers, right? I mean, that they were utilizing these fees as another profit center to extract money from people, right? But conveniently, these prepaid debit cards were kind of left off, right? And like any good kind of Wall Street banker, what you're after is kind of say, okay, how are you going to look for the loopholes to kind of, you know, to reactivate that profit stream?
Right. So now, in 2013, as Natalie Gunshannon's case is going on, in that very same report, the New York Times publishes this statistic, which I think find mind-blowing. In 2012, there were $34 billion loaded onto these cards with 4.6 million active users. By 2017, these numbers are expected to double to $68 billion on these preloaded debit cards with 8.2 or 8.4 million active users.
Wow.
So, and then for every 500 employees at the time Visa was claiming, with a company of 500 workers, they're saving $21,000 a year by switching to payroll cards because of how cheap it is to get these cards. And then you're saving money from cutting a check and going through that whole entire payroll process.
Well, I would say this. I mean, this is not simply about the employer saving money, right? This is about the employer shifting cost onto the employee. Right. Because basically what happens in that exchange, right? Like you were saying, it takes about $2, right? For a company to cut a check, something along those lines, right? It takes about $2 and it costs them about 50 cents in order to do these prepaid debit cards. So then you've got the bank, right? The bank saying, hey, look, I'm saving you, employer, right? I'm saving you $1.50. So you should take these cards. But then on the back end of that, then the bank says like, well, you know, that's not really all our cost here. So what we're going to do is that we're going to shift that onto the people using those cards, and we're going to add a little something for ourselves, right? That's what it seems to be. So it's this little kind of, you know, this little kind of smoke and mirrors
collusion.
Yeah, that it looks like the employers are saving money. Oh, this is just cheaper, but it's not necessarily that. The costs are just being shifted onto employees. I mean, that's insane. This is going back to company script.
Yes, and this is shifted on the people making $7.25 an hour, because you're sure as hell ain't going to do this to someone who's making $15, $20, or $25 an hour, because people would catch on. I mean, like, you would catch on to this. Like, hey, something's not right here. But when you're poor or when you're in poverty and this looks like a great option, of course you're going to take it. And one of the things this bill in the Senate does not do, it does not require the employees – or the employers to disseminate the information to the employees about the fees associated with the cost. It's up to the employees to read through the fine print, you know, like that size 4, size 6 font, you know, to everything associated with these fees. So I found online some of these fees are available, but there's one protection in this bill. I think we should give a round of applause to the senators who put this protection in there. And maybe why it's why they voted for it. Your employee is allowed one withdrawal per pay period. That's fee without a fee to withdraw their whole entire paycheck, any amount up to their paycheck. If they go over it, they get hit with a fee. But they can choose to one-time withdrawal per pay period to take money out of their bank account. And who's going to walk around with $800 cash?
Are you saying? So what's your choice? You got to get yourself your extra large money clip to walk around, like, you know, you're going to make it rain every paycheck. You know, I mean, what is that? That's insane. Yeah, I mean, that's insane. Why don't you just like say, like, you know, rob people here. Right. I really
I don't know about you, but after a week of collecting tips, $150, $200, a lot of ones in there, I don't feel comfortable walking out with a lot of ones in my pocket. It's pretty noticeable when you have a money bulging out of the side of your pocket. I don't know.
Frankly, that's disgraceful that that's a quote unquote protection. It's right. It's disgusting. You know what that is? That is just like, that is just an excuse that they can say, hey, we put in this protection for things. But really, they know in practice that will do absolutely nothing. Like, it does not deal with the way that people actually use these cards. It does not deal with the kind of, like, just exactly what you're talking about. What it means actually to withdraw a large sum of cash, right, and then having to walk to your car maybe like at nighttime after you get off of your 12 a.m. shift, right, to go out and out of your bank to get your money. That's insane.
Yeah, and this was the explanation given to me from a staffer who was working on this bill.
Yeah, this is just people. This is political talk. This is when they want to do something and they want to seem like they're doing something good, but in practice, this is about it's about going after workers, and it's a further continuation of a redistribution of the wealth from the people who are doing the work, especially at the low end of the scale, and passing it right up to the bankers and right up to the people at the top. And meanwhile, there's the give back to employers because it's going to reduce some of their costs. So really what you're doing is that you're basically causing the workers to have to kind of become some sort of super kind of, you know, global finance expert in order to figure out exactly what they're supposed to be getting in their paycheck. Right?
So here you go. But wait, there's more.
This drives me insane.
There's more. I'm going to stop you here. There's more.
Please do.
So the Restaurant Opportunity Center reported that these companies put withdrawal limits on how much you could take out per day to take it out and put it into a different bank account. It takes some employees 3 or 4 days to do this. And this totally caught a couple people off guard saying, wait, there's a way around this. There's a loophole here. Are you kidding me? Like, yes, there is. The Restaurant Opportunity Center looked into Darden Restaurants, which is one of the largest restaurant chains in the country. I think they own the Outback Steakhouse and the Olive Garden. And so, like, these two companies use these Darden cards for their employees. 76% of these employees report having fees to access their wages at an ATM. So this is what this bill goes after, right? Okay, you get this one free withdrawal per pay period to take out your whole entire wad of cash, put it in your pocket, go back to your car, and spend it as pocket money. Or go to the bank. I don't know about you. If I have $800 in my pocket, I'm not going to the bank. There's something that's going to be missing by the time I go between A and B. Like, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
But that aside, so this bill, there's a loophole in here where people actually – there's stories in this report. There were people that go 3 or 4 days before they had to send a rent check out to actually withdraw the cash, pay a service charge every time they go to use that ATM for 4 days in a row, and then go to the bank and then mail out their check. This is just to get your rent check out in the mail at the end of the month. There's that in there. There's also another story. If you use a gas station, you drive, right? I'm sure you drive.
Yeah, I got an hour commute every day. It drives me insane.
So when you go use your debit card at a gas station, I didn't really realize this, they put insane large amount of holds on your card.
Yeah.
So when a low-wage worker goes to use the gas station, they get $20 worth of gas out, but there's a large hold on their card gets declined everywhere they go. And what happens? They get charged money. They get fee after fee after fee. That fees build up like that.
That's right. So when you think you got, say you got, think you got $50 in your, you think you got $50 left in your bank account, and you go to fill up, right? And you're only going to spend, say, $15 to fill up your tank, right? But then the gas station is actually putting like a $40 hold on your card. And, you know, usually that lasts less than 24 hours, right? But still, you say, okay, I spent $15. Now I got $35 left. Now I'm going to go and I'm going to get, you know, some groceries for tonight's dinner. And you find out that there's an overdraft charge. You know, that kind of stuff is crazy. You know, I want to say, I'm really glad you brought up the stuff from the Restaurant Opportunity Center of Rock, because, I mean, their work on this has been great. And, you know, I think I just want to plug again, you know, we did this last week, but on June 8th and 9th at the Crown Plaza in Harrisburg. The Keystone Research Center has got its 20th anniversary conference, and the conference is titled It's Time for a Broadly Shared Prosperity in Pennsylvania. And one of the keynote speakers there is going to be Saru Jayaraman. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing it close. And she's the co-founder and co-director of Restaurant Opportunity Centers United. And she's going to be out. She's going to be there. And I'm sure this is going to be one of the things that she's going to be talking about, in addition to the Fight for 15, in addition to, all the amazing work that they do over there at ROC. So, we're going to try to get a link of that too as well. The report that Sean references in the show notes too as well, because people really got to be checking this out. I mean, this is really, really sneaky stuff, folks.
This is sneaky legislation stuff
that they're trying to kind of basically sneak in while we're not watching, depending on that we're too busy and we're too tired to figure it all out.
Exactly. So this is the type of stuff that gets bum rushed by the time the budget gets done at the end of the year. The budget deadlines are coming up on June 31st. Republicans are hoping to have a budget done quickly. This is the type of stuff, legislation that gets bum rushed to the governor's desk before they get home, before they take their summer vacation. And even, I believe this fall, because the election's coming up, there will be very limited session days. So they're going to be spending more time campaigning back home, or they're just going to be sitting around doing nothing because they do not have a challenger in their districts. Half the legislation is going unopposed, the legislature. But this is the type of legislation that gets bum rushed. It gets passed 50-0 in the Senate, and maybe like 5 or 10 people vote against it inside the House because no one talks about how controversial this bill is. This is the type of stuff that people are going to vote for it because the legislators on the Democratic side don't know what they're voting on. They're just going to hit the yes button because no one raises a stink about it, and then it's going to become law.
Crazy, 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 crazy. All right, we're coming up to a break. And there's a couple of things I want to say about this. Number one, this is one of the things, this is the kind of legislation that gets passed, in part because as progressives, a lot of progressives get really activated and really charged up when it comes to the presidential election, when we're thinking about national politics and national issues. But we don't have the same kind of attention when it comes to regional or statewide contests. And, frankly, folks, is like this is the kind of, this is the strategy that people like Alec and the Koch brothers are turning to. I mean, if you just look at the fact that the Koch brothers have basically pulled most of their money out of the presidential election and they're re-diverting their funds to statewide races, this is one of the reasons why. There's also the reason why that after Alex got exposed as putting forward all this model legislation, that they started up a second organization called ACE, I believe is what it's called. And that is about, county and municipal elections, right? And legislations that they're going to try to do this at the statewide and regional and the municipal level. So this is the kind of stuff that we have to start paying attention to. And I'll never forget this day. I'm a faculty member, right? Is what I do full time. And I was talking to a colleague of mine, right? He was a fairly progressive individual. And he was, we're talking about the elections or whatever. And I was bringing up this kind of bill that was coming up to Pennsylvania. It was a while back, so I don't remember what it was at the time, but it had connections with Alec and that could really significantly impact public higher education in the state of Pennsylvania. And I was talking about a particular political candidate, and his response was like, oh, who's that? I don't know. And after we talked about it a little bit, he's like, yeah, I don't know anything about Pennsylvania. I said, I don't know anything about Pennsylvania. I don't follow statewide elections at all. And this is a guy who's, again, he was from out of state, right? He had been here already for 5-6 years and still wasn't paying attention. We need to start paying attention, folks. So as we lead up to the break, the other thing I want to say is you think about this work that Sean is doing right now and uncovering this and making the phone calls and talking to legislators and so on. And I want to remind everybody that that we do this at this point at a volunteer basis, right? Can you only imagine what we could do if that we could actually do this work full time? If Sean could be out there kind of walking from hall to hall, talking to legislators, talking to activists, in order to kind of get these kind of stories out, can you imagine what we can do? So seriously, if you can, right? $2 a month, folks, $2 a month. Give me $5 a month. That'd be fantastic. Go to our support membership tab at RagingChickenPress.org. Click on the support membership tab and click become a member. Or if you're listening to this on Podbean, all you got to do is click on the kind of become a patron to help out this work, because we need more people with more eyes covering this stuff. All right. We'll be back right after this. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 5 years, we've brought unapologetic progressive activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism, and frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a good beer or cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive, activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support, and keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coup podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney. I'm the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. And it's been quite a day. The heat has been on out there. And Sean Kitchen is getting ready to hit the road and going out west where he belongs. Sean, Colorado it is, I hear, huh?
Yes. We're going to be flying in the Boulder in a couple, or this time next week. I'm really looking forward to it. Can't wait. It's something I've been looking forward to for a while now. It's finally here. After we're going to spend a couple of days in Boulder, we're going out to Yellowstone, spend a few days in there, the Grand Tetons, going to see Devil's Tower, Mount Rushmore, and then Sitting Bull.
Man, pretty cool. And so since you are going to the heart of craft beer country, as well as the the playground for the all the podheads that are out there.
Just I don't kidding. Know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but it is the center of where craft beer and arguably got some of its biggest initial starts out there in Boulder. So it looks like it's going to be a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait. There's this bike share like right up front of my apartment or our hotel in the center of Boulder. Mm-hmm. And from doing some research, looking at the maps, it looks like this city is laid out with a lot of bicycle trails, like actually dedicated bike lanes. You know, with their own separate from the road and the sidewalk to actually go to these places. And I plan on spending one day on the bike and going biking 30 minutes out to Avery and then hitting up a few breweries on the way back, Twisted Pine and Upslope or two of them. I got in contact with them, told them, hey, I'm a bartender, pizza boy. Bring out some beer with me. Let's have some fun.
Oh, and man.
So they were like, definitely, just tell the bartenders or the manager that you're here with some, that you've got who you are and what you got. And then, one of us will come out and we'll do some drinking.
So are you taking this out in an insulated backpack to preserve all of its beautiful freshness?
I'm taking it out in a crowler. I'm going to be wrapping up in some plastic wrap and then away we go.
Nice, man. Nice. Well, it's going to be so the big question is, Sean, do you think you're going to actually have some internet access out there that we can do an on the road special thing? I mean, probably not on Tuesday, but sometime next week.
Yeah, I think I could. Don't know what mood I'll be in, but I think we can do that.
What mood you're going to be in? That's an interesting kind of phrase. I'll just leave it at that. So if we can, we talked about this a little bit last week. If we can, we'll try to find a time to hook up with Sean next week and just maybe do a little shorter segment. Little report on kind of what's like on the ground out there in Boulder, some of the kind of craft beers that he's been sampling, some of the experiences he's been having. It'd be kind of cool. And since Sean is going to be away from us, I'm going to give you the beer recommendation for next week. It's nothing super. I mean, I'm not the craft beer kind of guru that Sean is, but I'm going to put a plug in for something a little bit more local. Local to me, or local to Kutztown, at least, where Raging Chicken Press got its origin. Out at Saucony Creek Brewery, that is right outside in Kutztown. And it's been a hot weather. And I have to tell you, they've got this X-Reserve peach and ginger saison that I find it very tasty. But the reason why I'm giving the recommendation of that right now is to go check it out, especially if you go to their gastropub, right? Go to their tap room and kind of get it fresh. That's the best way to do that. It is available. It's kind of some places around like Wegmans has been carrying it. But if you get it on tap, it's really excellent and it's super for the hot weather, right? Very refreshing, something that's nice to get out there. And from what I understand, they also got a raspberry out there too as well. But I'm more a fan of the peach and ginger saison too as well. So give that one a shot. So Sean, any parting words for our listeners who will be kind of crying in their beer next week because you will not be on the podcast? So any parting words for our listeners?
Contact your legislators and tell them to vote against this bill.
Fantastic. That's the best thing that you can do. Yes. And if you want to send Sean off on the right foot, I'll tell you, Sean's article is going to be published today. I want everybody out there to be sharing it like crazy, sharing it with everyone who will listen, and sharing it. Actually, you want to contact your legislators, reference the article and say, this is the kind of garbage that we need to stop. All right, so we're going to call it a day and bid Sean a fond farewell and an awesome vacation. We will be back with him when he gets back. And yeah, Sean, have a great time next week, man.
Yep. Just let you know, I am going to be away until the 17th. So it'll actually be a couple weeks.
It'll be a couple weeks. All right. So then no problem. So we'll do. That's actually going to be convenient because I have a couple people that I'm going to bring on as guest hosts. Then we'll do an out the coop with somebody else I've been batting around there too as well. And don't forget to check out, in addition to out the coop today, check out our interview on the sit down with Paul Ricci and next week with Karen Faridin of Burke's Gas Truck. Okay, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We are out. Go enjoy the good weather. It's hot. All right.
See ya.